Good morning. Jeff here, your data privacy guru.
And I'm Alexandra Ebert, Chief Trust Officer at Mostly AI.
And we're the hosts of the Data Democratization Podcast. Today, we're going to run through a deep dive on strategies for privacy and, of course, AI.
Absolutely, that's right. Today, we're featuring Punit Bhatia on the show. He was the former privacy and protection officer at ING and has tons of experience establishing GDPR programs at large international firms. In his current role, he provides strategic privacy coaching and is known for his pragmatic business-aligned advice. But as if it weren't enough, he also is an author. His latest book is titled AI and Privacy, How to Find Balance, which is a super relevant topic given today's challenges around data protection laws.
Sounds like a super impressive guy. Let's go ahead and meet him in 3, 2, 1.
So, Punit, very happy to have you on the show today. You're a privacy pro with 22 years of experience in the enterprise space and definitely somebody who knows the ins and outs of managing privacy and the challenges that large organizations, banks, insurances face. Can you briefly introduce yourself and share a little bit about your professional background with our audience?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Alexandra. You guys are doing a wonderful job of bringing AI and privacy and also connecting the data aspect of it in this podcast. So thank you so much for this and thanks for having me. Regarding me, I'm a data privacy professional, but I come from an IT background. Mm-hmm. So that allows me to understand privacy from a data or a technology standpoint. And what I do is I help CPOs or DPOs or even COOs in three things. First, it's about having the right strategy because these days every country is coming up with a law. Mm-hmm. So if every country has a law, you cannot have a strategy in each country. So you need to have an overarching strategy, and that's what I help. Mm-hmm. Second, I help them with having a network of privacy champions. So you can have a DPO, you can have a CPO and experts, but you need to have that embedded in the business. And that's where you need to create a network of champions of privacy within the business. And that's the second thing I help. Mm-hmm. And the third thing I help them with is the training, because you cannot go to a procurement officer or an HR officer and say, hey, this is GDPR, these are the rights. They say, yes, thank you. But you have to make it relevant for them, scenario-based for them, that when they are hiring a job applicant or processing a job application, what do they need to do? What is it that matters? And of course, as you know, I've written a book on AI and privacy recently, apart from my other books on privacy. So that's in short, and I've been privileged enough to work in large enterprises, but you mentioned it, and thanks for the warm introduction.
Of course. I'm really looking forward to reading your book. I think it's already available for pre-order on Amazon for our readers. We'll, of course, announce it at the end of the episode if you want to check it out. So you talked about managing privacy. In your opinion, what are the biggest challenges for enterprises when it comes to managing privacy?
I think it first starts with ownership, as we call it, the accountability principle. Who is responsible for privacy? Mm-hmm. Whose business is privacy? That's where it all starts. Because typically, there are three broad ways in which we can manage privacy. I mean, I'm not talking about those who say, okay, it's not my business, we don't need to do anything. That's another category, but broadly three categories. One, those who look at privacy as a compliance function and say, okay, compliance or legal or somewhere there, it should be managed by a privacy professional or a data protection officer. Mm-hmm. Now, that's one way of looking at it. But the second way is you use privacy in business. Mm-hmm. That is, business takes the responsibility of privacy. And the third is then you are using privacy as a business differentiator, because there are studies now, because we are 3 years into GDPR, now studies are available that it impacts customer trust, it impacts customer loyalty, and even operational metrics. So if it is impacting those metrics, the question is, where does it own and who owns privacy? The first challenge in any organization is the ownership or the responsibility, and I believe it should lie with the business. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm not saying the business should start deciding on reporting data breaches or not, but it should start with the business. That's the first thing. Second thing is interpretation. We all know GDPR is a framework law. So people looking for black and white answer, yes, no, it doesn't work. And then the third thing is making it operational. So once you have the ownership, the interpretation, and then you need to operationalize. But I think the third is the most easiest in the three. I won't say easiest, meaning it's very, very easy.
Yeah.
Relatively, it's that's how it works. The ownership, the interpretation, and then the operationalization. Those are the three challenges which large enterprises usually face. And those are the ones we need to solve.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Talking about ownership, I know from some business units that see privacy more as, okay, that's a legal topic and approach it rather hands off. So do you have any practical advice on how to achieve a mindset shift in organizations that are handling privacy that way?
That's a very good question. The way I see is there has to be a dual responsibility. Dual responsibility meaning the legal does have a part to play, or compliance does have a part to play, because end of the day, it's a law.
Mm-hmm.
However, they are responsible for defining a policy, giving you guidelines and so on. However, the implementation or operationalization is business responsibility. And that's where you need to define, maybe call a business responsible for privacy, call it a data protection executive, call it privacy champion, whatever you call it. But there has to be a duality in those responsibilities, mm-hmm. legal or privacy professional taking care of the law stuff or interaction with the regulation, regulatory bodies, while the internal business operationalization is business responsibility. So that's, I strongly recommend, rather than building up a team in legal and expecting things will happen. Yes, they will happen. You need both.
Yeah. I see that this is definitely important to operationalize it and make it happen, as you said. One other thing I would be curious about, we oftentimes, when we're approached by prospects, hear that internal data sharing and getting access to relevant and exciting data sets is something that's super cumbersome within large enterprises. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we hear it takes 6 months, 8 months, or even longer. Why is that?
I would say it is cumbersome because large organizations are careful and they want to protect things. But right now, that protection is more to the side of a little bit too much. Let's put mm-hmm. it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's taking time. And there's also a fear-based perception that the privacy laws say we should not transfer data, we should not share data. Well, privacy laws always say you should do the right things with data. So if you have a reason and you can justify that reason, you can. You cannot say that finance needs to process the payroll and it will take 6 months to give the data. It won't work. Or the corporate office in US needs to analyze whether the bonuses should be given and what's the expenditure, and we don't want to give data. So those flows would continue. The only question is, if your corporate office in the US needs that data, do they need at individual level or at aggregated level?
Mm-hmm.
If you ask that right question, the right answer usually would be they need an aggregated information. And there is no problem because that aggregated information or pseudonymized information is outside then the purview of GDPR or other privacy laws. So it's asking the right question and solving it in the right way. But at the moment, there's a fear and there is also caution to the extreme.
Yeah, I have the same feeling. Sorry, did you just say pseudonymized data is out of the scope of GDPR? I thought that always just anonymized data is out of scope.
Of course, if it meant like that, then I would rephrase that. Well, pseudonymized and the key kept here and the data there. So then it's mm-hmm. effectively anonymized.
Mm-hmm.
So if you pseudonymize data, don't share the key and give it to the US entity. They cannot break in if it's reasonably pseudonymized. Because mm-hmm. anonymization is also a form of pseudonymization. You pseudonymize and throw away the key. That's anonymization, one way of anonymizing.
Yeah, understood what you're getting.
It's technical. These are tongue twisters.
Yeah. So what would be your actionable advice on how enterprises could speed this process of data sharing up?
It depends where they are sharing. So it's not straightforward that I can say, this is how you can share. So it's not going to be technology. There is a technology element, but it's structurally, where are you transferring? What are the reasons? And then you need to decide. And then also what data? Because if it's aggregated anonymized data, then it's no problem. But if it's mm-hmm. personal data, then we have to understand the reasons and those reasons being valid. And also those locations providing adequate safeguards. And if not, then we know life is a little bit challenging at the moment for large enterprises in context of data transfers, given what happened in the European court ruling last year, or Yeah, last year now, it's time flies. Yeah, that's what July.
That's true.
So it's challenging. So there's no one size fit all answer. It has to be contextualized. And context means where the data is going, what data is going, why it is going, and what's the purpose of it. If you can answer all those things, then we can talk about safeguards and make it happen.
Yeah, understood. You mentioned data anonymization several times. So what's considered successful anonymization and what needs organizations look out for to make sure that the data really is anonymous and not something that's easy to re-identify?
Well, that's a complicated question, but a good question though. I mean, if you truly anonymize data, then it would hardly be relevant for business that or analysis perspective, because why do you anonymize is so that you can do out, carry out research, carry out statistics and use it for some output. But if you truly anonymize it, it is effectively rendered useless, if I may call it like that. So what we need to do is we need to find a fine balance and choose how much of risk is possible and how much of risk appetite we have and how much of risk we are creating, and then create. Or the other alternative is what you guys are doing. You look at the production data and create something called synthetic data. So it's another way of generating anonymized data, but it's alternative data rather than the production data anonymized. Those are the solutions, I would say. And anonymization is complex, but the only way is you cannot have completely anonymized, but you need to look at the risk of, I mean, there are technical techniques which are available. I mean, the K anonymity, L anonymity, D closeness, and all that. That's too complex. Let's not get there. But in short, look at reasonable way of anonymizing, not completely, but weigh out the risks and carry out a risk assessment or data protection impact assessment in that context on what can be identification risk.
Yeah, of course, that's always to be advised. Talking about, or you mentioned the complexity of anonymization techniques. Some organizations develop their own anonymization tools, technologies, others rather purchase something from vendors. What's your take on that? What's the wiser choice as an enterprise?
It's a strategic choice, and it depends on which business you are in. If you are in a business of Department of Defense, then I would say it's better off you develop your own. But if you are a normal enterprise, a large enterprise, and dealing with technology, and technology is not your core business, and the risk or the sensitivity of that data is reasonable, or I would say normal under normal circumstances, then you are better off using somebody else's algorithms. Reason being, it's a specialist area and you can't create everything. And it goes back to the same thing which people were saying, should you outsource, should you keep in-house? It's the same thing with the anonymization techniques or algorithms for encryption or all those things. If it's really, really sensitive and you know you want a proprietary algorithm, go for it. But then you really need to have a strong reason and appetite to invest, because it comes with a cost.
Yeah.
And if not, you're better off choosing a good vendor, and in most categories or most companies would fall into the second category. Very few exceptions, 80-20 rule would be 20% companies, or even less, 1 or 2% maybe, would fit into that category wherein investing into your own algorithm is worth it.
Yeah, absolutely agree. So we talked about the challenges when it comes to internal data sharing. From your experience, do you have any like best practice in mind? Can you share a story of a team or department that really successfully managed to reconcile data utilization and privacy protection? And what were they able to achieve in this project?
Well, I've worked in companies which have successfully implemented data lakes. And I've had the good fortune of working in two or three of them and working with them. And when you implement data lakes, you can implement layers of data in which the identifiability of data is maximal or reduced based on what's the need. Like you're reporting for risk and compliance, you don't need identifiable data, but aggregated data. And a very specific example in that context is we were building, systems. And for the testing out of systems, especially in the what we call the last stage of testing, which is called user acceptance testing, just before production, you want to have data that is very, very similar to production environment. But having production data now in context of GDPR, it's a risk because you outsource, multiple parties, multiple vendors have access. So what we implemented was a data masking technology, because I'm talking about 3-4 years ago. And that time you guys were not there, or this technique of generating synthetic data from production environment was not available. So we did that, and we did it successfully, and it allowed us to use the de-identified data, or the masked data, as we call it. So Tom is replaced with Harry, and his date of birth is added by 2 or 3, so random techniques. And it's very close to production environment, but it is not the environmental production data, and you cannot identify people. So we did that data masking quite successfully.
Yeah, yeah, that's good to hear. That's definitely one of the big challenges that we are approached with, that you really need this highly realistic data to test your environments. And that, of course, with the onset of GDPR, it's not too easy and not allowed to use the production data as is for all of these projects. So definitely a big application area for synthetic data now.
Yeah, and even last week, I was talking to a payments provider, and they were thinking of analyzing all payment data. And the challenge was, again, if you use entire data, then it's not in the remit of GDPR. And I advised them that they need to look at generating synthetic data from that customer data and then do their statistics and analysis from marketing perspective. And once that's done, they can take out the findings and apply back on that data. And it'll be very close, because AI simulations can nowadays generate data which is very close to your production data, but it's not production data. And then the most important thing is it allows you to carry out research rather than having to focus on an anonymized data which has taken out the necessary elements.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the main benefit of using synthetic data to anonymize data, because you can really retain nearly all of the utility, versus with the classic anonymization approaches we touched upon, you of course lose lots and lots of information, which is a downside if you want to do analytics or research. But now I'm super curious to talk with you and get your take on AI and privacy. Your book is called AI and Privacy, How to Balance. So what's the secret? How can large enterprises successfully navigate the complexity of AI and privacy?
I wish the secret was like the book, secret, think, believe, imagine, and it'll happen.
Would be nice.
Would be nice, but it's not that simple. I mean, it's about a few things. One is having a balanced view, because entities or corporates tend to think of one perspective, usually the financial perspective or the business perspective, while there's the legal aspect, the privacy aspect, human aspect, and more importantly, ethical aspect, because it's also based on the society in which you are. So you need to look at multiple perspectives. Then the other thing is create a balanced decision-making framework, that is, have a committee, have a team, and of also representatives from multiple backgrounds who steer that decision making. And then, of course, the other aspect is have a set of principles, because privacy is principle based. AI, we talk about responsible AI, AI for ethics, or ethics by design, but there's no such structured mechanism for AI. So what we recommend is having a set of principles that you have, combining, starting with the GDPR and then followed by a responsible AI, and combining them and following them. And while you do that, there's also about keeping in mind the responsive aspect of it. Responsive not meaning the responsive design, responsibility aspect of it. That is, it's lawful, it's done in a fair way, and it's done with an end in mind. End from a societal perspective rather than from a corporate perspective. So if you do that, I think you will find a reasonable balance, and that balance would allow you to eventually see through both AI and privacy, because it's not and or, it is both. AI is important, AI is the future. Privacy is important, and that's also going to stay. So that's in a nutshell how you will find balance. Have a framework, have principles, have a committee, and look at it from a 360 degree perspective, if we call it like that.
Yeah, I can imagine that this is definitely important. Can you elaborate on having the ends in mind from a societal perspective? What would be an example of that?
So what I meant is, if you're putting in a solution, you should think at it, if you are the end consumer of it, don't think at it from business perspective, but think it from a consumer side of it. And don't judge it like, oh no, I would love to have it. think it in terms of a conservative person and saying, what would I think about it? Would I like that solution to be in place? Mm-hmm. Would it be respectful of my privacy? So take, for example, you're building a virtual assistant, say like Alexa or Google Home or anything mm-hmm. that Apple has. So you would like that to be put in the bedroom and you want to silently listen to the conversations. And all that sounds fine, fancy, because you can create profiles. You can have a psychological profile and predict and then, of course, sell more. And all mm-hmm. those things are commercially viable. But then look at it. If you are in your bedroom or if you are in talking to your lawyer and you forgot to turn off your audio, would you like that conversation to be heard? And usually we will say, yes, it's no problem for me because I'm very open. But think a little bit and give it some time to sink in. And if then you say, yeah, or probably, I think I need to think, that's a good enough reason. Mm-hmm. So if you have that slight hesitation, slight doubt, then you need to think of if you can, even as a commercial person, have that little doubt in your mind. The actual user would have far more, and especially the skeptics would be going after your company much, much more. So that's what I mean, end in the mind, meaning don't look at it from business perspective because you have to run through the initiative, but end consumer, end yeah. person who will use it, think from their perspective, or even ask yourself question like we usually say, would this be something which my child's a 16-year-old daughter or mother or a sister would like to use?
Yeah.
If I can record their conversation, would I be happy? So those are some tough questions to ask, and they're not easy.
Yeah, absolutely not. But I think those are the important questions to ask. And it's definitely critical that you put yourself in the shoes of the yeah. average person and the consumers, and not only think of maximizing business impact when implementing AI solutions. You mentioned AI frameworks, and there are plenty of AI frameworks emerging, also AI guidelines, ethical AI guidelines, but we don't see too much regulation currently. Of course, there are some discussions, but what's your perspective on AI regulation? Should there be more regulation or not?
I mean, first thing first, there's no regulation because AI is a new technology and technology always leads and laws always lag. So regulations come a few years later. Mm-hmm. I mean, the iPhone came in 2007 mm-hmm. and we had the GDPR in 2018. The previous privacy legislation was in 1995. So there's always a lag. There's always a few years. So right now there is no legislation, but there are a lot of frameworks. The US framework is a good one. The EU guidance is also a good one, the responsible AI. OECD has a guideline. Even China has a framework, but of course I missed the word transparency in there mm-hmm. or trust in there a little bit. I mean, though that word I'm missing, so it also creates some doubt. But end of the day, there are a lot of frameworks. And none of them is perfect, in my opinion. You need to take the best of it. And with time, in due course of time, we would have legislation, we like it or not. And yeah. that legislation will determine what is to be done and what is not to be done. But still, if people expect that'll be the only legislation to follow, I think they would be disappointed, because that'll coexist with the legislations we have, like the GDPR, like the yeah. e-privacy directive or regulation, or even other regulations around data or security. So it'll have to be coexisting, and it's better for companies to start adopting a framework or principle-based approach already, so that when that legislation comes, you don't have to go back. You can go forward and enhance your principles and the security and framework.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that. Coming back to privacy and artificial intelligence, in your opinion, what would you say are like the three top challenges or obstacles that organizations have to overcome if they want to implement AI projects?
Only AI and or AI and privacy?
Only AI projects, and what the privacy challenges are if you want to do AI.
I mean, it doesn't change much, doesn't shift much from what I said earlier in context of privacy challenges, mm-hmm. because AI, of course, complicates the situation because there's a larger business benefit and larger business interest. But it still is, who is the owner of this decision? Is it, yes, we believe business will decide, but who are the stakeholders who will join in? Mm-hmm. Typically, people tend to avoid saying, no, we don't need privacy because it's just a data AI project, but you do need them. It's not a, we don't need the lawyer because there's no lawyer legislation, but you do need them, not because there is a law or not, but because they will bring a different perspective to the table. So first thing is ownership and creating that team who would decide. Mm-hmm. So decision-making framework. The second is interpretation, because since there is no law, people tend to think it's freewheeling, while you still have your social responsibility, corporate sustainability, ethics, responsible company, all those things. And they are very subtle definitions. And it varies from culture to culture, company to company, and society. So yeah. That's the hard part of it, the softer part of it, of course. But it's, I mean, soft part, but it's very hard to manage.
Yeah.
And then the third dimension is with those two, getting it operationalizing, making it operational. But if you can sort out who is deciding, that is, who are the stakeholders on the table, then second, what are the context in which we are going to decide, that is, having a clear set of principles, clear set of guidelines, and then having an approach, maybe ethics by design or responsible AI or a mix of everything, then you have the ingredients to set the right direction. Mm-hmm. So those are the few challenges.
Yeah, absolutely makes sense. And what we hear from our prospects and clients is, of course, that with AI projects specifically, it's also the vast amount of data, realistic granular training data that they need access to, which makes it kind of difficult within large enterprises to even in the first place get access to this data. So this is also something that we hear quite frequently. But I definitely like what you're describing about. I think we can also talk about it as privacy by design, to having everybody on the table from the beginning of the project and not say, saying, okay, privacy is not relevant or is an afterthought, but really having the lawyers and the privacy people involved from the beginning, if I understood you correctly.
Absolutely. And I think regarding your question on people thinking data is not accessible, and that's why, because people directly go and start asking the data. And you, when you go directly, then it doesn't work. You need to, mm-hmm. what I call a 5A approach. You first need to create awareness on what is AI, and also have awareness of what is privacy or what are the legislations or ethics by design and responsible. And then you need to assign the responsibility to some person, saying this is what we are looking at and what is feasible, rather than straight away demanding that we need this data. Then conduct an assessment, align, and finally agree on what is it that can be available and on what conditions. And when you do that, then you are making an informed choice. Typically, the challenge I see is I need this data because we have to do this marketing analysis. It doesn't work like that. That sets off a lot of people or cuts corners on multiple dimensions.
Mm-hmm. Understood. And what would be your response, or what I oftentimes hear is that people say, hey, privacy is actually hindering the adoption of AI. I assume that you disagree with this statement. So what are the people doing wrong that have this opinion?
It's not people doing wrong. I mean, in anything that we have, there's always what we call the glass half full and the half empty. Mm-hmm. So there are those people who love the noise, and it's the job of the media to create attention or create a little bit of sensation. And those people tend to be heard a little bit more, because mm-hmm. I still see a lot of articles, whether on LinkedIn or on media, saying privacy is dead, or the pandemic killed privacy, things like that, or AI will kill privacy. Well, it's good for sensationalization, but effectively, if you look at it, those who are in responsible positions, they are generally not making those statements, unless, of course, I'm the head of consulting of somewhere, and it's my business to attract clients. And then what I would do is I will say, oh, it's killed. AI will be killed because privacy, so I can get some AI business. And then on privacy, I will say AI will kill privacy and get that business. So I think by and large, people are being responsible and they are aware of, and awareness is increasing. Of course, mm-hmm. we are not where we should be, but we are not where we were 4 years or 5 years ago. So it's a journey. It's an evolution we are in, and we are on the right path.
Yeah, I think so too. Talking about increasing awareness, what's your perception on how important privacy is currently for the C-suite?
It's contextual. It's there are a few companies who have started to see this as a differentiator. Mm-hmm. And there, not only awareness, there's also an intention to put privacy as a focus. For example, if you see Apple, I mean, just to pick one example and what's in everybody's eyes,
yeah,
they are clearly putting their mind on privacy and trying to differentiate that we protect privacy better than everyone else. And then if we see Microsoft or Cisco, they're also consistently producing messages saying we are private, we protect privacy. And so Google is also joining these days.
Mm-hmm.
And Facebook is lagging, but it is also catching up. If you look at the number of job requirements Facebook has on privacy in last 1 year, you would be amazed how many privacy professionals or lawyers they are hiring. So something is going on in there and something will happen. So by and large, I think people are well aware and willing to act. But then there's a second category, second tier, which are highly regulated environments. So this was big tech.
Mm-hmm.
The highly regulated environments like banks, insurance, or pharma, they're also very keen and awareness is very high.
Yeah.
Then we are left with the non-regulated, the manufacturing or the other companies or other industries. There, I think we are still catching up. The awareness is a little bit less. They have done hiring a director of privacy or a DPO, mm-hmm. and they believe we've done enough. And that there, the journey is a little bit behind, but everybody has its own place and space because of the things.
Yeah.
These big tech need to make money, so they are ahead of the game. Banks and insurance or pharma, they don't have a choice because they're so highly regulated.
Yeah.
For them, compliance is core. And then manufacturing and others, they have a little bit of a leeway and they are taking that leeway. But
yeah.
Again, it's on the right path, though I would have liked those in the category 3 to be in category 2 already, but it'll happen with time.
Definitely. We all hope that they eventually evolve to a further category.
Yeah.
I do think with banks and insurances is on the one hand, they have a regulation, but on the other hand, the trust, consumer trust is just core to their business and that they simply can't afford any privacy leakages and things that destroy trust. Do you think that especially in the not so heavily regulated enterprises, I think a majority of GDPR fines, or at least from the big GDPR fines, also went to the retail sector, that this is the reason that they were like not yet in this middle stage of privacy awareness? And do you think that overall these industries are taking it more seriously now? Or do you think it will just take more time and a few years until they consider privacy really as something that has to be managed much more carefully?
I think it would be hard for me to say comment on the fines part or why they happen in which way, because I'm not mm-hmm. having enough information on to comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
But from where I see it, I think the regulators also needed some time to catch up.
Yeah,
those are also organizations. If GDPR was new for organizations, for vendors, it was also new for regulators. If organizations needed to hire DPOs and privacy professionals, so did the regulators. If we needed to get budgets approved, so did the regulators. So the story is not that different.
Yeah.
They were also in the same journey and they are also catching up and coming up to speed with it. So, and again, like organizations focus on high priority risks or high risk items, the same thing our regulators should be doing. And I think they are doing, and they are focused on where the maximum risk is, and there they are focused on, or sometimes a complaint comes or some incident comes into the light, and of course that needs to be handled. I think that's the approach, and they also have limited resources, so I will not put them on spotlight and saying they've not done enough.
Yeah, understand where you're getting at. So you see, you say that regulators also had to catch up. Does this mean you expect that more privacy fines are going to happen in the coming years?
I mean, I probably don't need to say that, but if you look at the trends of fines mm-hmm. from 2017 to now,
mm-hmm.
every year there have been more fines,
mm-hmm.
and every year they're not both in number and in the size of fines. So that trend is on. So it would be difficult to say it won't happen. So the trend is that, and it will continue because
yeah.
we all know companies are sometimes taking it easy. Some of them, not all of them.
Yeah.
So it will continue. But the fact that they are speeding up and they are having enough staff, I think a lot of guidance would also come along.
Yeah, of course. I think it's all with a combination of, on the one hand, giving guidance and explanation and showing organizations the right way forward. And then, on the other hand, also having fines as a tool to really get people to take this topic as something that's important.
I always compare this with the when we are going on a red light or a crossing and there's a camera. Mm-hmm. There are two ways of looking at it. The government is making money by putting in the camera, and they will issue fines, mm-hmm. or I need to drive safely. I think usually we look at responsibly and saying I need to drive safely. It's the same in case of GDPR or privacy. Yes, there are fines, and yes, there will be cameras, and yes, there will be fines. But the objective of those cameras or those fines was never to make money. It was always that people are driving safely and responsibly. And it's the same here in GDPR. The only thing is, it's not the police department or traffic department, it's the regulator, and we are not individuals driving here, organizations are driving.
Yeah, I think that's a nice analogy that really shows the intent behind these fines. If we look at 2022 and beyond, which topics should privacy and data professionals be prepared for? What are your predictions?
I would say AI and data, mm-hmm. because thanks to the pandemic, of course, we look at pandemic in different ways, but thanks to pandemic, digitalization or digitization has increased and increased multifold. And it's not seemingly ending soon. And even if it does, there would be variants and so on. So we will stay busy. But we are not going to go back to 2019 or 18 levels. So digitization will stay. And if digitization stays, then two things will happen. There will be a lot of data, mm-hmm. and there will be a lot of AI and a lot of technology to manage. And when that is to manage, the privacy professionals will also have a role to play. So it's good for everybody. And if you see these days, the number of posts I see on LinkedIn, number of ads I see on YouTube have increased many times. Mm-hmm. And it's because companies in the last 12 months have been investing on technology and AI and so on. So that will continue, and I don't see anything being different. But along with it, another thing which will come up is security. Because as laws lag, I think the technology also lags the criminals, because criminals usually are a step ahead. They find the way, and then technology beefs up, security measures are created. I think another big thing that will happen is the security around the data.
Yeah, I can see that coming. So with AI and data being more important, and of course also privacy staying as important as ever, our listeners should definitely check out your book on AI and privacy, How to Balance. It's available on Amazon. Can we find it anywhere else in the web?
Right now, it's available on Amazon. Mm-hmm. So it's published with my co-author, Aline Shivo, mm-hmm. and we have it available on Amazon in print and ebook.
Perfect. Good to know that. Before we end, at the end of our episodes, we usually try like to play a short like this or that game with our guests. Just answer what comes to your mind first. Are you ready for that?
Let's try that.
Perfect. So podcast or Clubhouse?
Podcast.
Why podcast? Because you have one on your own?
I have one of my own and I'm on the other one. But the other thing is... Clubhouse, I have had some privacy concerns. I have not researched them. And I'm not a fan of being locked into one operating system. So mm-hmm. Clubhouse right now is on Apple or iOS only. Mm-hmm. So that's why I would prefer podcast, because it allows access to everyone rather than locking you to a platform or an app.
Yeah, that's a good argument. Privacy or personalized marketing?
Oh, I would say both.
Best to reconcile both of them, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the personalized marketing for those who choose, and personalized marketing for those who do not, or non-personalized marketing for those who don't choose, and then you take care of privacy.
Yeah, of course. Basically giving people options. Yeah. AI, friend or foe?
Friend and foe of who?
You're to decide.
I think it's a friend. Mm-hmm. Any technology that comes along, it's always a friend. The way we use it, it may be counterproductive. So we need to be responsible and aware of it. It's like missiles or satellite navigation or satellites. Are they friends or foes? I mean, normally they are meant to be friends, Now, if you use it for other purposes, then they can be forced. But I'm more for the friends side.
Yeah, yeah. Good attitude to that. GDPR, all black and white or lots of gray areas?
That's a tough one. For me, personally, I would say black and white because it's a principle-based approach. Mm-hmm. You can always find to be in the black or the white. And then sometimes you are in the both. And yes, there's a shades of gray. But for me, it's generally black and white because it's principle-based. There's not so much confusion as people make out of it, at yeah. least in my mind. If you're clear on what risk you can take and not, and you're willing to take the risk or not, then the answer is generally straightforward. But people don't want to take the risk. They want the risk to be on the GDPR side. No, it said so. That's where the grays come in.
Yeah, understood, understood. So do you have the expectation that GDPR is going to change in the next few years? Because some experts say that there are some like gray areas and things that need to be clarified or that were maybe too strict. What's your take on that?
I mean, like any other law, it would evolve, mm-hmm. but it won't evolve in the short term. I think there's every 5 or 7 years, there's a review. Mm-hmm. So GDPR also has its review cycle, mm-hmm. but it will not be fundamentally changing. It will only be tightening or adding in context of what the world would have changed.
Yeah, yeah, understood, understood. Then my next question would be books or ebooks? What do you prefer?
I would prefer ebooks.
Okay, why is that?
I mean, books, I do have some of them with me, but then I need to carry them, you know. But mm-hmm. if the book, ebook is, even when I'm walking or I'm listening, if I have to, if something strikes you, you can, for the ease of accessibility, if I call it like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely a benefit. And my last question would be data minimization or open data sharing?
Data minimization.
Okay, why?
I mean, open data sharing as a concept, it means we will share data mm-hmm. and there's nothing called minimization. It means share all data. Mm-hmm. I'm against that because not every data is to be shared. Mm-hmm. I mean, both of us, we would not share our bank account password, mm-hmm. even though we may know each other. That's as simple as that. So it's not open data sharing and password is data. However, within the limits, within the context, we may be open to sharing some data and mm-hmm. sharing some insights. So that's minimized data. So always within the minimization perspective.
Understood, understood. And in general, do you think it's beneficial for organization to, of course, not openly share all data, but some data with startups, research communities? Or do you think it's better for these organizations to just use their data themselves?
I would call it transparency is always welcome. Mm-hmm. So you need to be transparent and you need to be collaborative. And this data sharing comes in the collaborative space. Because you as an organization have your own mindset, own culture, and own resources. If you're collaborating with others, you have more opportunities and more insights. So definitely go ahead and share data with the right rules and right application of principles of privacy.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely a good point. One thing about data sharing I'm also excited about, one of my colleagues just published a blog post about explainable AI and explaining the role that synthetic data could have in that regards, because it would help you to publicly share the data to understand the model and whether it's discriminating and how it performs in a privacy-preserving manner. And I think there it's also beneficial to have ways to really ensure that also audits and external people can check what algorithms are deployed and used in practice. So I think there are definitely some benefits to data sharing, but I agree that of course, not all data should be shared openly and definitely not passwords. Don't do that, dear listeners. Other than that, do you have any last remarks for listeners?
No, I would say go ahead and explore the potential of AI while respecting privacy, and that's the right way to do it. And it's possible to do it. Mm-hmm. If you factor in, like you mentioned, explainability, ethics, the responsibleness, purpose limitation, and also human intervention, because we don't want the scientific movie situation wherein there's a robo and he or she has whatever you want to call that, or it has taken control over everything. And we are not able to control that because that's AI and is learning from humans. We don't want that to happen. So that's why ability for humans to intervene or have control over that those actions is the most important thing.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Poon. It is always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for sharing all of these insights with us today. And for our listeners, don't forget to check out Poonit's new book, which will be available soon, and also his own podcast, Fit for Privacy. Definitely plenty of insightful conversations and talks there as well. Thank you so
much. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
This interview should be covered in a book, don't you think?
Maybe it should be. Let's see, what would be put down in the last chapter for takeaways?
Yeah, so the three biggest privacy challenges for enterprises are?
Ownership, legal interpretation, and of course, making privacy operational.
One practical piece of advice Poonit shared was to create dual responsibility by treating privacy not only as a legal issue, but also an important business driver.
Exactly. Poonit also recommends synthetic data for data sharing, since traditional anonymization techniques oftentimes render datasets statistically useless.
As for AI, companies should follow frameworks and their own principles. It's important to take the perspective of the consumer in addition to the business.
That's right. We also heard predictions from Poonit, who said that privacy fines are on an upward trend, but we can also expect a lot of guidance coming our ways from the regulators. After all, the intention of regulations is to reinforce good behavior in data management practices.
Yeah, and I really liked the traffic light analogy here.
Yeah, that was nice. I would have added that having synthetic data is like having access to a helicopter in a traffic jam.
Or a really cool bike.
Yeah, maybe. But
let's leave this one to the imagination of our listeners. But if you would like to ask a question or suggest a topic for a future episode, please drop us a note or voice message at podcast@mostly.ai.
Wonderful. See you next time. The Data Democratization Podcast was hosted by Alexandra Ebert and Jeffrey Dobin. It's produced, edited, and engineered by Agnes Fekete and sponsored by Mostly AI, the world's leading synthetic data company.